Hello, and welcome to the Major Gifts Fundraiser Podcast. I'm Monica Van Deventer. Let me tell you a little bit about the tribe we're building here at Major Gifts Fundraiser. We're working with people like you who want to be among the very best in this field. You want to accomplish great things. You want to challenge yourself. You want to grow, and you are up for going on a journey because you know a journey is what it takes to become the very best version of yourself. You're listening to this podcast because you know that in order to be a great fundraiser, you have to spend time thinking about how you'll be a great fundraiser. You can learn more about our new online training programs at majorgiftsfundraiser.com. And without further ado, here's Clark.
Buenos dias, mis amigos. Clark Van Deventer here from Major Gifts Fundraiser. Hope that you are having a great day. All right. Hey, peak performance cohorts, you are missing out. All right. I just wrapped one up. We just started one this past week. You are not going to become the person you want to become by accident. You're not going to get there by chance. You will become the person you want to be, and you will get where you want to go on purpose. All right. Years ago, I mean, we still have a second residence, I guess, in Lake Tahoe. But when Lake Tahoe was our primary residence, people would sometimes say to me, like, oh, you're so lucky to live here. And I'm like, no, I did not get lucky. I got here on purpose. Like, this is where I wanted to be. I pointed my car towards Lake Tahoe, and I went to Lake Tahoe. I got there on purpose. You are going to get where you want to go on purpose. So I've been repeating this lately, but I think the decision to be great, the decision to be excellent at your craft, to be a peak performance fundraiser, I think it's a personal decision. I think that's a moment that you come to where you're like, I'm going to be good at this. I'm going to excel at this. I'm going to ensure that I'm doing everything I can to get everything I can out of all I've got. And that's personal. And that's like something you decide on your own, but you work that out in community. We become great in community. You surround yourself with people who want to bring that out of you, who want to coax you along. So you missed the boat, all right, with this last group cohort. We just launched it, just had our kickoff call this week, but our next one will start in October. So you may be thinking about that now. And if you're interested in that, you may email me. All right. Email me. And we'll limit these to 6 people. So we'll meet over 12 weeks from early October through middle of December, which means you'll go through the group coaching calls with me during my favorite month of the year, gratitude month. There's no way I'm gonna like limit gratitude to one day, Thanksgiving Day. Give it the whole month, right? And you go from gratitude month, and then you transition to Giving Tuesday and the whole year end push. If you're interested in, perhaps you just want to be in the know on these as we gear up for it in the fall, Clark@majorgiftsfundraiser.com. Okay, but peak performance cohorts is not the topic of today's podcast. Today, I want to answer a question that was emailed to me. So I felt bad because someone emailed me this question, and then I didn't respond to it. And I will confess, this is something I sometimes do. Someone emails me, and I want to give a good response, and then time passes, and then more time passes, and then more time passes. But I did eventually email this person back and say, I want to give a good answer to this. And how about I give a good answer on the podcast? And she was up for that. So here's the email. All right. She says, hi, Clark. I was referred to your podcast by a fellow fundraiser friend. Don't we love those? And thought I'd take a shot in the dark since I couldn't directly find an answer to my question in your podcast. Our organization doesn't have a formal major gifts program, and we have a pretty small number of major givers. In fact, we officially name it a major gift at $1,000. But we do have a couple of $5,000 to $10,000 givers, and occasionally have had larger one-time gifts. Met with a donor who had given $5,000 plus a company match equaling $10,000 for a couple of years in a row, lapsed for a year and a half, and I met with him to try to understand why. Okay, she says, meeting with him again on Monday with our CEO, and we'd like to make an ask. All right, listen to this. At our last coffee meeting, he told me he could give larger and basically outright said he felt some people weren't comfortable talking about big numbers. All right, she adds, as any good fundraiser would, I took that as a challenge. All right, she then adds, we don't have any wealth screen tools, but I did look up real estate and salary range for a position like his. I think his salary range is likely to be somewhere between $200,000 and $400,000 a year, and his home is worth $700,000 now. Personal giving history is just $5,000. All right, she confused me right here because above she mentioned that he'd been giving $5,000 for a couple of years and then had lapsed, and now she says personal giving history is just $5,000. So I got a little confused by her email there. She says we have a compelling case for him to donate $30,000, but I'm thinking that's too big, and I don't have the data to justify that kind of ask. I'm likely going to chunk it out and ask for $15,000. Do you have any thoughts on additional data points I might use for the right amount? P.S. Great podcast content. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and experience. With gratitude, Stephanie. All right. Well, first of all, thank you for that P.S., Stephanie. It is my pleasure. I'm actually having way too much fun doing this. Okay. Are you surprised by this, Stephanie, or any podcast listeners? Are you surprised that I have a lot of thoughts on this? By the way, this is the 172nd episode of this podcast. I skimmed through all 171 previous titles because I am sure I have addressed this on the podcast before. But skimming through the 171 previous titles, I did not see one where I specifically and directly addressed this as the primary topic. So maybe I've addressed it as an aside, but it certainly warrants being addressed head on. By the way, when we are doing it, I'm just looking at your email here, Stephanie. When we are doing a client intake survey, one of the questions we ask is what's a gift that gets people's attention? And honestly, $1,000 is a great gift. It's a threshold gift. If you can build a list of people who've given you $1,000, you are on your way to building a successful organization. So you've got to figure out as an organization, what is your forcing function? How do you get people to give you $1,000? Because if you can get people to give you $1,000, if you can get a list of 100 people who've given you $1,000, you can begin to sift through those and find the ones that could give you $10,000 or $100,000. By the way, it's way easier. Don't you just love all the by the ways I have in this podcast? It's way easier if you have $100,000 donors. It's way easier to raise your next $100,000 by getting one of those people to give $100,000 than it is to find 100 other people to give you $1,000. Just going to add that. All right, so Stephanie has a donor who gave $5,000. Donor lapsed. Not sure why. All right, my guess is that the donor does not realize they have lapsed. Time flies. They don't realize it's been 18 months since their last gift. So that's my guess. They don't even know they've lapsed. That's why there's no such thing as an underperforming donor. There are only underperforming organizations. There's no such thing as a lapsed donor, only lapsed organizations. So if a donor is quote unquote lapsed, don't think they don't love you. just realize that time flies and you haven't done the necessary work to get in front of them at the right time to get them to give a gift. She's trying to figure out the right amount to ask for. She says they don't have access to any wealth screening. She's looking for data. I don't care that she has no access to wealth screening. Skimming through my list of podcast titles, I definitely did notice this one, and this is one of my favorite things to talk about. I hate wealth screening. I think it is completely overrated. I think it's the diet pill of fundraising, and I get super annoyed by people trying to sell you wealth screening like it's a diet pill. What do I mean by that? Someone wants to be in shape. They don't want to be intentional about the food they eat. They don't want to exercise. They just want to lose weight. And so they will take diet pills. I think fundraisers are like, I don't know who to call. I don't know which of my donors to focus on. I need wealth screening. And I'm like, just start meeting with people. Trust me, if you meet with people and if you ask good questions, you will find good donors. So just start meeting with people. But she's trying to figure, so like, where is she going to get the data to know how much to ask this guy for? There's no data. There's no wealth screening service out there that can give her the kind of data that she can get by meeting with him and asking good strategic questions. That's the data she wants. She's trying to figure out how much to ask this guy for. And the data that she has because she knows the guy. She knows something about his work, what his salary would be, where he lives. By the way, here's another by the way. One of the first things I would do, if I'm looking at a long list of donors, and I do this with organizations, so the donor evaluation worksheet, where we're trying to figure out how to rank your donors, I'm going to look through spreadsheets of people who've given in the past, and I'm going to look at giving histories and amounts, and someone's going to get my attention. And the first thing I'm going to do when they get my attention is I am going to just go, let's look what their house looks like. I'm going to Zillow it. I'm going to look at it on Google Maps. Now, okay, could they be house poor? Could they be living beyond their means? Sure. Could they, if they have a really modest house, does that mean they don't have money? No. Maybe they're the millionaire next door. Maybe they have money because they've lived very modestly. But still, where they live is a clue. So she's done that work, right? She looked at their home and figured out how much it was worth. She, in personal relationship with him, she knows what kind of work he's in and can make some assumptions about his income. And so these are the kinds of things that I learn in personal relationship. And once again, are there other sources of wealth? Could people have accumulated wealth in other ways? Sure, but chances are someone who is a retired teacher has less wealth than someone who is retired from corporate law. So for me, this is all done in relationship. There's no diet pill or wealth screening service I can take to replace this. Then in answering that question, how much should I ask for? The answer to that question is largely going to depend on their previous giving. So it doesn't matter how much I know about them through wealth screening or in personal relationship. The number one driver for how much I'm going to ask for is going to depend on their previous giving. I don't care if someone's worth $20 million. If their largest previous gift is $1,000, it's going to take a lot to get me to ask this person for more than $10,000. I like to help donors move up incrementally. All right. So my mentor, I have a picture of him on my wall in my office. The late, great Gerald Panis, he used to say that a major gift was 10 to 25 times the size of the annual gift. So if someone gives $1,000 a year, you could ask that person for $10,000 to $25,000. All right, going back to Stephanie, if this guy was a, let's just say he was a $5,000 a year giver. Let's say that he had 4 years of $5,000 gifts, and there was one lapsed year. I would ignore that lapsed year, and I would say he's a $5,000 a year giver. And wait, on Jerry's 10 to 25 times, I could ask this guy for, well, $5,000 a year. I could ask him for $50,000 at a minimum. I'm personally more comfortable with 5 to 10. And now you may think that's really low. So I'm going to take $1,000 donor. I'm going to move $1,000. If I have $1,000 donor, I'm going to be really happy to move that donor to 5,000 or to 10,000. Have I gone 25 times? Have I asked a $1,000 donor to give $25,000? Yes, I have. But I would only stretch that. Okay, I'm going to say 5 to 25 times is what I'm really comfortable with. 5 to 25. I'm really, really comfortable at 5 to 10. And but as a rule, I'd say 5 to 25. I'm only going to go from 1,000 to 25,000, 25 times the size of the annual gift. I'm only going to do that if I have a lot of indicators that they're ready for this kind of jump. Through my strategic questions, I would need to have uncovered lots more clues that they're ready for this kind of jump. All right, now in the case of Stephanie's donor, she mentions a $5,000 gift. Again, I'm not sure if that's a one-time gift or if there's previous $5,000 gifts. It's just not clear. If the donor has only made one gift of $5,000, there's not a long track record. So I don't really think the 5 to 25 applies to a one. I need more of a track record of giving for me to think about this being their sustaining gift that they give to the organization on a regular basis. If someone has only given one gift of $5,000, the only thing I'm really thinking in most cases is, how do I get them to give another gift of any amount? Because the second gift, getting someone to give their second gift to an organization, is so important. Now, in this case, the donor has pretty much invited her to make a bigger ask. And Stephanie, in her email to me, she said, listen to this. She says, we have a compelling case for him to give $30,000. This amount isn't made up. This isn't like, and trust me, fundraisers, I know that sometimes, like, you're just like, well, I mean, our budget's $1 million and I'm asking her for 10,000. Like, where did that number come from? Like, I don't know what's going on, but she says, we have a compelling case for him to give $30,000. And she said in her last email that he sort of challenged her. He said, I could give more. And I think a lot of people are intimidated by talking about big numbers. So to me, these are the indicators that I'm looking for that would justify me being more on the like higher end of the scale in terms of that 5 to 25, right? 5 to 25 times the size of the sustaining gift. So honestly, whether this guy has given one gift of 5,000 or he's given three previous gifts of 5,000, you know what I asked this guy for? I'd probably ask him for the 30,000. She says, Stephanie says she has a compelling case. This is a real number. And whether or not the other thing I wish I knew is how he gave the previous 5,000. Did he give the previous 5,000 in a response to a direct mail letter or some mailing? Or he attended some event and he gave 5,000? Like, if he gave 5,000 previously with very little cultivation, it was just a flippant gift. Like, that's a really good flippant gift. It's a really good response to a direct mail letter, or a really good response to having attended a luncheon or something. So even if this is just one gift of 5,000, I feel good about 30,000. I feel like I can ask for six times that amount if I've cultivated him, had a meeting, asked strategic questions, gotten some buy-in, had him challenge me, had him volunteer, he can give bigger gifts. I feel pretty good about asking this guy for 30,000. And that's not just, I don't want you, dear podcast listener, to think Clark is so brave and Clark is so, just caution to the wind. No, like, I am scaling down Gerald Panis's definition. Jerry used to say 10 to 25 times. I'm saying, as a rule, I'm really comfortable slowly and incrementally moving donors along. You may have heard before. Have you heard this? People say you can't ask for too much. That if you ask a donor for a big gift, they'll be flattered. And that is just not true. You can ask for too much. And when you ask for too much, donors are not flattered. They could be offended. I have done that. But even if they're not offended, you could damage the relationship. It can just throw things off. Some people will say, ask for a big gift, don't negotiate against yourself. So you're thinking, hey, like, I think they're going to give 50,000, but let's ask for 100, because what do we have to lose? They may say no to 100, but they'll give us 50, you know. But let's make them tell us 50 instead. But what I don't like about this is that I never want my donors to feel like they let me down. And if I ask for 100 and they give me 50, don't they feel like they let me down? So take a donor who's giving $1,000 a year and ask them for 5 and let them give 5 and then later ask them for 10 and then let them give 10 and later ask them for 20 or 25. All right. And then maybe you go from 25 to 100, but be patient and coax them along. All right. This is what you do as a life coach to your donors. You are pulling them along. You are prodding them. You are trying to help them become who they want to be. Like, they actually care about these things, but right, whatever it is that your organization does, they care about these things, but you need to bring them along slowly. If I am working out by myself, guys, I used to do a ton of burpees. I haven't done burpees in a long time. And I'm like, my wife and I are going on an anniversary trip. I'm like, I want to get in better shape. 20 years coming up. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to start doing daily burpees. In addition to all the other stuff that I always do, physical fitness is a big thing for me. Okay, but if I'm working out by myself, I may do 20 burpees. If I'm working out with a trainer, my trainer may say, Clark, let's do 40 today. And it's more than I would have done on my own. But my trainer is helping me become the person I really want to be. And he's, by giving me a number, by giving me a goal that is bigger than I wanted to do, but it's within reach. If I'm thinking 20 and my trainer says, Clark, let's do 500. I'm like, no way. That's too much. That's too much of a gap. Like, that's ridiculous. No, come on. I just want to say I have done 500 burpees in a day. Just had to say that. But slowly move your donors along. Get buy-in. The right amount to ask for is a hard thing to know, but I would encourage you to bring people along slowly. Get them to commit a little, and then a little more, and then a little more. Challenge them occasionally. Ask them to stand on their tiptoes, but it still has to be within reach. And each time they invest part of their treasure with you, you'll get more of their heart too. All right, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. All right, that's it. Hey, Stephanie, did I answer your question? Dear podcast listener, did this help? Do you have follow-up questions? All right, email me, clark@majorgiftsfundraiser.com. That's clark@majorgiftsfundraiser.com. All right. Hey, by the way, if you have not yet, like, subscribe, share the podcast, rate us, review us, you know, whatever platform you listen on, what options they offer you. Tell a friend. And all right, that's it. Hey, thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
All right, Monica here again. If you like what you heard on this podcast, you'll love our online training programs. You can complete our online training programs at your own pace, and you can watch or listen to them from any device. And unlike that last conference you attended, the challenge questions and action steps that come with each of our modules will give you concrete things you can do today to level up as a fundraiser. You'll raise more money than ever before by developing deeper donor relationships than you ever thought possible. So head over to majorgiftsfundraiser.com to buy now. Thanks for listening.